I was a marine engineer, boat builder, rebuilding boats, fixing boats, sailing boats and sort of stuff.
Every week I interview successful property investors, but this week I'm going to be talking to Ruben, who's done just about everything the complete wrong way.
I'm all like, yeah, let's do it, let's do it. And he's like, whoa, slow down.
He lives in South, but he's invested up North and it went disastrously wrong. He's lost money. He's had failed joint venture partners.
Key lessons, I think, firstly, is having bulletproof contracts.
What do you make now then profit?
Around 6 to 7K a month.
That's decent. So you're going to find out how he's turned things around, made the mistakes that you won't have to make after watching this interview.
Half of business is just doing it faster than anyone else can.
Even watching this now, I might be like, do I recognize him? So you were on the eviction, bro. Oh, when you were evicted out of the building. What was the key takeaway? Ruben, welcome to Winners on a Wednesday and congratulations on your success. You've got a nice portfolio, financially free, full-time in property, but I want to talk in this interview about some of the challenges, the struggles, the lessons, the grit. So firstly, thanks for coming on the show.
Thank you very much for having me. It's a pleasure to be here.
What's your background before you got into property? What were you doing?
So I was a marine engineer, boat builder by trade, contracted all over the world or mainly around Europe, but also in the Caribbean, rebuilding boats, fixing boats, sailing boats and sort of stuff. So
nice.
Just contract work mainly.
Nice. And what made you want to transition into becoming a property investor?
So I originally first started flipping houses with my dad when I was about 15. That's sort of the first job I had, was working under him when we were just buying stuff in Gosport, doing it up and either selling it on or renting it out. So I'd always been in property for a little bit when I was younger. And then basically on my last contract before coming to the crash course, was I ended up losing about £15,000 in tax for incorrect compliance when I was working in Sweden. So I decided enough was enough. I was going to stop working abroad, living out of a suitcase, and wanted to become a property entrepreneur, property nice. Millionaire.
Nice. Which you've now done.
Yeah, correct.
So congrats.
Thank you very
That's
much.
Epic. So when you came to the crash course, how did you hear about the crash course and what was your experience there?
So quite funny. I saw some of your videos years ago talking about buying houses for 50K, spending 20K on it and then being worth X amount. I was like, yeah, that doesn't happen in the South. Like this, you're completely off. And then I was actually renting out my dad's place. Thought I'd put it on Airbnb to get a couple nights a month. Put it on Airbnb, it was boom, 90% occupancy. So this is a golden goose. I found a business model here, renting off of landlords and then renting them out on Airbnb. Just typed in on YouTube, whose videos came up? Yours.
Of course.
So I thought, all right, I'll go to the crash course.
Yeah.
And then we all know what happens at the crash course. You're in a room with two other entrepreneurs and the possibilities are endless. Your mind gets open to like a new way of thinking, a new way of life. So signed up for the training then and there.
Yeah, because I think that you can either learn from your own mistakes or you can learn from somebody else's. You can figure it out. You can pay for your mistakes or you can pay for your education.
I've been doing both.
Yeah. But the crash course is £1. Yeah, so yeah, it's quite cheap, but it's obviously valuable. What happened then? What did you learn or what changed at the crash course? What was the trigger?
I think at the crash course initially was just the amount of energy there. And so entrepreneurship, when you buy yourself, is kind of a bit lonely and that sort of thing. Next thing, you're in the crash course, you're already chatting to the dude next to you, talking about deals, talking about this. I think the environment is one of the key things. But then also just about how to get properties, how to source them and all this sort of stuff. Because I didn't have a clue about any of that. My first rent to SA was through family. Mm-hmm. So I think actually learning how to run the numbers, do the due diligence, find landlords, contracts, all that sort of stuff, which you teach at the crash course.
Yeah. What do you make now then profit? After all your expenses, your mortgages, everything, what are you left with in profit on average month?
Profit around 6 to 7K a month.
That's decent. Are you full-time now in property?
I've been full-time since around about May 24.
Yeah.
Yeah. So about eight months now.
Yeah. Yeah. Amazing. So tell me about your first deal then after kind of being educated. What was your first, was it a rent to rent? Did you buy something?
So the first deal after joining the academy?
Yeah.
Yeah, so the first one was I was a JV partner. I put in the money. It was a three bed to a four bed HMO in Sheffield, which is miles away from me because I'm in Portsmouth. But well, I know when you talk about the training, picking your patch, pick somewhere where it's cheap within an hour. Where I live, there's nowhere cheap within an hour. So I was working abroad at the time, thought perfect, I'll JV with someone, I'll put in the money, they'll do the work. And then we refinance at the end and I'll get all my money back, in theory.
And what happened?
I think it's a bit stupid on my department. I kind of was real hands off and wasn't really keeping too much up to date with them sort of thing. They weren't updating me that much. I've been away to New Zealand, come back after 2 months, went and saw the property. There was not much progress. Gave them a new build schedule, come back after another 2-3 months. Still no progress. The builder actually fell sick as well. Had to give the JV partner a settlement to get him off of the project and for me to take back full ownership.
Wow.
Yeah.
Nightmare, mate.
It was a nightmare, yeah.
So it went wrong?
It did go wrong.
Did it go wrong in the end or did you pull it around?
I've pulled it around just about, but we've gone over on the budget, of course, because we paid the builder for X amount of work.
Mm-hmm.
And then a lot of the work that they'd done had to be redone. I was there grafting on the tools for 12, 14 hours a day. For about sort of 3 weeks. This was before the eviction, actually. Now it's fully rented, fully tenanted, but we still haven't managed to get the refinance. The refinance has been in for about 2.5 months, but the bank are still just pulling holes in everything. Every 2-3 days, they want this information. Yeah. We've been meaning to draw down for about 6 weeks, I've been saying it for. It's kind of getting a bit of a running joke. But in hopefully next week, we should refinance and pull out 135K.
That's good. But hiccups. What are the lessons then from this? Because obviously, yeah, it's worked out in the end.
Yeah.
But it's been a bit of a nightmare.
It has.
You had to settle with the joint venture partner because they weren't pulling their weight. You've had builders, but you had to stop and change builders. Mm. You've now got this issue with the finance. What are the key lessons or takeaways from that?
Key lessons, I think, firstly, is having bulletproof contracts with penalties / settlements of something for underperformance. If I'd had that in the contract to start with, I then wouldn't have had to give them a settlement. I could have said that you haven't delivered on the agreement. Here's, we're ending relationship now, which I didn't have. So that's why it cost me a bit of money.
It's a good lesson that.
Yeah, it is.
So in other words, if somebody says, I'll do all the work, I'll do this, you put the money in, you go, oh, that's fine. But we need to set some key performance indicators.
Yeah.
And if you don't hit targets, then you lose your profit share.
100%. 100%. Mm. Also, to be honest, invest in local to you. Mm. My father told me this and I didn't even tell him that I was investing up in Sheffield because he would have said the exact same thing. What he said was right. You end up with it going over budget. It'll be hours away for you to drive to get to and sort things out, which has been a common occurrence. Like we've been having some issues with the boiler lately and I've had to pay a plumber £200 every time to go around there. Whereas if it was close to me, I'd just go around there and repressurize it, fix the issue. So I think investing somewhere local to your home is key. And with the JVs, if this project goes wrong, is this somewhere you'd actually invest in yourself? Because currently I've got a portfolio on the south and I've got one random house in Sheffield.
Yeah.
So it doesn't, you know, I'm a bit spread out, which...
Where are your other houses then down the south?
All in Portsmouth and Gosport.
And did you buy these after that one?
So I already had... Saying that, I've got a pub in Wales, but we'll get onto that in a minute.
That's even more of a wild card than the Sheffield house.
Yeah, I know. I already had one buy to let in Gosport, and then I'm now about to buy another two in Southampton, sort of way. So,
which is not far from Portsmouth.
No, exactly. Everything around there is in the.
What would you say though about? Because I agree with you about the buying close to home. Mm. I think if you live in London. I think it's okay having an area. If you say my area is going to be Sheffield and I'm going to get good builders in Sheffield, I'm going to go there every couple of weeks, I'm going to get a power team in Sheffield and that's going to be my patch, then it's fine. I think if you're going to have a house in Sheffield, a house in Wales, a house in Liverpool, one in London, now you need teams everywhere. So I think it's okay to invest far from home as long as it fits within your business plan. But you've invested now close to home, and you're buying in Portsmouth.
Exactly.
And you've built the majority of that portfolio up recently.
Yeah, so one of the key things is that you don't know what you don't know. Yeah. I didn't realise on doing HMO conversions not just in the South, that bridging finance companies are lending 100% of the development. So I didn't realise that for my 100, 150K cash that I had, that I could be investing using bridging local to home. I've always been buy for cash, and that's been it really right. before. So now utilizing bridging finance to do some deals local to home, which are all money out BRRs.
How do you find a good bridging company?
Through the academy, Gareth Wareham, he put me in. He's been doing some good HMO stuff in Portsmouth. Yeah. He put me on to a good broker, and the broker's been facilitating all of this.
So what you're saying is, you might think you don't have the money to invest in London or Portsmouth or Devon or wherever you live.
Yeah.
But actually, if you utilize bridging finance and exactly. development finance, it can go a lot further than you think. So let's talk through a case study then of one of your, give me an example of one of your nice, juicy Portsmouth deals. So, and let's do a rundown of the numbers and work out how much cash you actually had to put in yourself.
So currently on the one that we are just about to complete on in about sort of 20 days, purchase price is 262.
Right. And this is in Portsmouth.
This is in Southampton, just outside of Article 4.
Okay. So 262.
262 purchase price.
Yep.
It's going into a 7-bed, 7-en-suite. And then the refurb on that is going to be about 180K.
Jeez.
Which the bridging finance are going to fund 100% of.
Right.
And then, so I've got to pay, and they're going to, so you end up being about 33% of your own money. So it'll be about sort of 130 to 150K.
Still quite a lot of cash.
It is a lot of cash, but that'll be less than I've done in Sheffield.
Well, maybe. So so let's get this right. So you're going to be putting in about 130 grand cash, which can be joint venture. Is that your money?
That is my money. Yeah.
And where is that, just from savings and
that
stuff?
That is from contracting all over the world, where I just did 70, 80 hours a week for years.
Graft.
Yeah, graft.
Right.
Graft.
So you're putting in 130 grand your own money.
Yeah.
The bridging finance company using bridging and development finance are putting in the rest. What's the GDV on that?
GDV, we're aiming for 650.
So then you'll get
commercial valuation.
You'll refinance and you'll get back your 130.
Yeah, exactly that.
Right.
Still leaving 25% in the property.
Yeah.
And then after mortgage should be cash flow and about 1,800, 2,000 a month profit.
Do you know Bart from the academy, from Bournemouth?
Yes, I do. I'd speak to him quite a lot.
Do you?
Yeah.
So he lives in Bournemouth.
Yeah.
And I went round his house yesterday. He bought a commercial property. I don't know if you might even know the one, but I'll share anyway. He bought a commercial property in Bournemouth, which is a very expensive area, for 81 grand. It was an auction property. Now, to be fair, it's very small. It's only, I think, 37. No, it said it was 37 square meters, but it's actually 30. So that's very small. Very small. One floor. It's a freehold flat, basically. And it was a commercial unit. He bought it for 81 grand. He refurbed it for about 15 grand. And he's just had it valued at 140. That's in Bournemouth.
Good deal.
So even if you do only have, I think he needed about 30 grand to put into that, but he used credit cards and a small personal loan. So he didn't put any of his own money. But if you've got like 30, 40 grand and you're thinking, but I live in Bournemouth, I live in Portsmouth, I live in Devon, I have to go to Grimsby. I think it's a really important lesson what you share.
You don't have to. You really don't. So,
and also your deal that you're doing, although you're using 130 grand, you could raise that.
For sure.
And you could partner. I'd rather have 50% of something than 100% of nothing. So 100%. You could do that. So that sounds like a good deal though.
It is. Well, so that's my figures on it. Quote me at
in a year.
In August, at Christmas, when we're done. But also I spoke to another private bridging company. They are willing to lend even more. So the total money in is more going to be about sort of 90K, but their interest rate is higher. They're looking at 1.25 to 1.5 a month, but they will lend a higher loan to value.
Right.
So it's just trying to work out.
What's the exit strategy of these deals? Because if you've got a 600 grand GDV, are you even going to be able to refinance that? Is that even going to pass the stress test?
Yes, it will.
Why? Is it a HMO?
It is a HMO, yeah.
So is it just a case of you getting maximum rent?
Yeah.
Because this is a problem some people face with expensive areas, is if you're doing BRR, if the end value is high, that means that the mortgage is going to be high. So now you're thinking, well, does the rent even cover the mortgage? So if you're in Sheffield, it probably will.
Yeah.
If you've got a house in Portsmouth worth 600 grand, but I guess you're doing it as HMO, so that's
exactly where it's smart. HMO, so it should be making cash flow and a gross about £5,250 a month. Yeah. And then after bills and your mortgage at 6%, we've done it's about £1,800 to £2,000 a month profit. Yeah. Profit at
that's
the end.
Great. Yeah. What about some of the completed deals then that you've done? Can we work through the case study of? Give me another one.
So on more BRRs.
Yeah.
So the Sheffield one is the only one that we're complete and done on now. Yeah. On my other one, I've just got a traditional buy to let. So nothing that glamorous there. What we've been focused on now is more rent to HMO.
Okay.
Because
what in Portsmouth?
In and around, so Southampton and Aldershot, everywhere, which is sort of about 50 minutes from where we live in Portsmouth.
Yeah.
This has been really eye-opening how much cash flow you can get from such a low investment. So on the rent to HMO model, we're doing an average five grand to 10 grand per one for setup. And these are all cash flowing £800 to £1,300 profit a month.
So what's the advantage then between BRR, which is slow and takes time? It does. But the thing is, you're moaning about this. You've been trying to get a refinance for 6 weeks or whatever. Bro, that's standard.
No, it's not 6 weeks. We're up to about three months.
Three months of when you first tried to get it though.
Yeah.
What month did you complete on the house?
When did you first buy it?
Yeah.
January, this time last year.
So a year ago.
Yeah.
Okay, so it is a bit slow. But sometimes people think, though, it's going to be really fast. But when you're doing a buy, refurbish, refinance, buying a house can take forever.
For sure.
I mean, completing on it, the average house takes 3 to 6 months to complete. Now, sure, you can push it faster. If it's auction, you can get it done, you know, within a month or so. But that's a waiting game. Mm. Then you've got the refurb, which can take forever.
Yeah.
Then the refinance, which you're on now, take forever. It can take, on average, that's probably about 8 weeks for a refinance. So the whole process of a BRR, if someone comes to me and they say, I've got 100 grand, I want to put it into a deal. Even if I had a deal ready for them, realistically, by the time they've put the money in, done the refurb, done the refinance, got that money back, it's probably going to be about a year.
Exactly.
But it's slow. Wealth generation, wealth building, but then rent to rents is quick. Fast, quick cash flow, but at the same time, you don't own the asset. So there's a kind of pros and cons. What are your, do you spend most of your time on the slow BRR or on the?
I'm a very impatient person, Samuel. I want it all yesterday. So that's one teething issue that I have to deal with myself. So that's why we're kind of diverse in the fact that we've been doing some slow pound, some BRR, and then some rent to HMO.
How many properties have you bought in the process of buying for the BRRs?
So we've got two in legals, one due to complete at the end of the month, and then another one the following month. And then the one in Sheffield, the pub, and my normal.
That's a lot. Nice little portfolio.
Yeah, it's going all right.
And I bet the GDV on the whole portfolio has got to be in the millions.
Yeah, it's coming up.
It's decent.
Yeah, once we've got these two.
How much did you have though when you started? So like when we first met, you had your one buy to let.
So I had about 150k in cash.
So you're just recycling.
And about 70k in shares.
Right. So you had a decent little pot of money.
Yeah.
And you're recycling it.
Yeah, exactly.
Do you not need to wait for one BRR to be finished and fully recycled before you move on to the next? How are you taking on so many all at once?
Well, yes, you do need that to get the money back out. And that's what is, I think, killing me about the rating on the refinance for the Sheffield property is because I'm due to complete on this, on the Eastleigh HMO very soon.
Auction.
Just through a normal estate agent.
Okay, so you won't be penalised, but you'll just lose the deal.
But exactly, and it's like 3 months into it. We've got a completion date at the end of the month, but it's subject to me getting the funds out.
Yeah.
So I've been out raising the money as a fail safe to see if I can then use someone else's
money. Have
you been
successful at that?
I have been, yeah. I've got about 70-80% of it.
Let's talk about that. Let's talk about raising finance.
Okay, yeah.
How do you raise finance? What's your strategy? You need 70 grand. You've just got 70 grand. How do you get it?
Make sure people believe in you. Firstly, when I was younger, nobody believed in me and that sort of thing. It's only after compounding quite a few years of experience that I can raise money quite easily now.
Where are you finding investors?
Already through my network, but also through high ticket places. So I worked in the marine industry for a very long time. I know my way around boats very, very well. So yachts cost quite a lot of money. So often the places at the marina, but I wouldn't say to go to the marina if you don't know anything about boats. So just sort of high-end places, golf courses, country houses, that sort of thing, being in places which attract wealth.
Well, you know where there are investors there.
Yeah, exactly. But also, sorry to interrupt you, just through your own network, there's a lot of people who have got 50 grand in the bank that they don't know what to do with. Since posting on Instagram about what we've been doing with the rent-to-rents and this sort of thing, the amount of people that I know from my already contacts that I've met through over the years have reached out like, hey, mate, I got 30K. I don't really know what to do with it. Through the gym, I've had people come up to me and be like, hey, Ruben, saw your post. I've got 20K. What do you think I should do with it? Next minute, you've got a pool of 520s. There's 100K. Yeah, give them 10% return on investment. They're happy. You've got 100 grand.
Yeah. So true, mate. That's 70 grand that you've raised in principle.
Yep.
How many investors is that? Is that one, two?
That's off one.
One investor.
Yeah.
And where did you meet them?
Again, through my original sort of friends and family.
Just friends
and family. Yeah. It's just a very good friend of mine.
So sometimes I think the lesson is that when people say, where do I find an investor? Sometimes they're right under your nose.
Yeah.
It might be your auntie. It might be the mate you go to the gym with. It's not even necessarily rich people. A lot of people that are just very normal 9-to-5ers, I've got 50 grand in the bank. So think, who do you know? And how do you approach them? Let's say you've got a mate or family friend who you know has got 50 grand, 70 grand in the bank. How are you approaching them? What are you saying to them?
It really depends. If depends on how well you know them. If I wasn't like on a really, really good basis with them, I'd probably just say, hey, don't suppose you want to hear my pitch on something, do you? Run the numbers over and with them and tell them about the deal. And then normally, as investors, we go, you're giving what? You're giving 10% return. And then there is perk up and they go, oh, I might have 20K, 50K.
So just to set context, when you say, do you want to hear my pitch? You don't mean, can I pitch to you?
Exactly. You're running them through the deal.
Right. So you're more like, hey, you're my mate. You know, you're an experienced whatever.
Compliment them. You're quite successful.
I've got a deal. I'm actually going to be raising some money for some investors. Can I pitch it to you as a practice run?
Indirect.
Right. So you're not actually, you're not saying to them, oh, can I pitch you? It's more like, can I show you my pitch? And can you give me feedback? Because I'm going to be meeting some investors next week and I really value your opinion.
Exactly.
So it's very indirect. And that way, there's no rejection. There's no awkwardness. You're almost giving them a get out of jail card, because if they're not interested, they'll just go, yeah, man, really good pitch. Good luck with it. If they are interested, then they'll say, I might have a bit of money actually. So you're kind of just networking, friends, family, showing them what you're doing, hearing their thoughts. And then sometimes they'll say, nah, I could be interested actually.
Exactly that.
What are the contracts? How are you structuring it? So like with this, if you've got a deal and you need someone to put the money in, you're going to get bridging on it and they're going to put the deposit and everything in. How are you structuring that deal?
So we'll be doing it on an unsecured loan, mainly. Right. Unsecured loan, because the bridging company will want first charge on the property. Right. And then you can get into complications of first charge, second charge.
Right.
But it depends on how well you know them again, because some people will not want to part with their hard-earned cash without it being secured to something.
Right.
So all of mine are on unsecured loans.
Could you offer maybe a personal guarantor?
Yeah, you can offer as a personal guarantor. It gives someone confidence, but collateral.
Or you could do it as a joint venture.
Yeah.
So you could say, we'll set up a company together and you can loan the money to the company, but it's your company and my company, and then we can get a bridge that way.
Yeah, correct.
There's more than one way to skin a cat. Talk to me about the rent-to-rents then. So you've got how many rent-to-rents?
So we've got three rent-to-HMOs and three SAs, which are separate, which are mine. Three with my business partner, three rent-to-HMOs. Due to get the keys to another two in the next sort of 3 months as well.
Nice. And how much are they making across all of them?
So across all of them, they're making around sort of about 5K.
Is that just for you, or is that for
no,
you?
No, so 3.5K is in rent HMO with my business partner. And then the others are making me around sort of 1 to 2 to 3.
Yeah, sure. So you got, but that, even that, like 2 to 3 grand, that's a full-time salary.
Yeah.
In an average job.
For sure.
And they're yours. Then you've got your business partners. How do you determine, if you find a rent to rent, how do you determine whether to take it on yourself or to put it in the other account with your business partner? Does that not get a bit awkward?
So with my business partner,
who's your business partner?
Jacques Bridges.
Okay. I think I know him. He's on the academy.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I met him at the one of the dinners. He sat on the table for me from Gosport, where I'm from as well. Nice. Coincidence. So how do we separate it? Well, Jacques a lot more conservative than me. I'm all like, yeah, let's do it. And he's like, whoa, slow down. Let's think of the numbers, think of the risk. And so mainly we've been targeting just rent to HMO because he believes in that business model. He didn't really want any SAs. I already had some SAs. So that's kind of how we do it.
So the rent to HMOs go to you and him, and then the rent to service accommodations go to you.
Yeah, exactly.
How are you finding rent to rents? Are you finding them from agents, landlords?
Through agents.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, through agents. A couple of direct to landlords, but mainly through agents.
And are you approaching the agents?
I'm going in person.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, always
in person. Do you wear a suit?
We will be smartly dressed. Just next week, we're going to get suited up and go back in because you should always be rechecking in.
Yeah.
But mainly just going in, make sure.
Cold or with an appointment?
Cold.
Okay. Let's figure out more about what you do.
No problem.
So you're walking into the estate agency. I'm the lettings manager.
Yep.
And you just come in the door.
Yeah.
So I'm here.
I've already looked at the window.
Right.
And seen what properties are in the window because I'm not going to waste my time doing due diligence on numbers or anything. I'm going to walk up to the window, pick a property that might look like it could work. I go, hello, good
luck. Hold on.
Sorry.
What might work? So what kind of property might work?
So we were always targeting rent to HMOs.
Right.
So
a big property, lots of bedrooms.
Yeah.
Okay, cool. So you've seen it. You walk in, I'm the letting agent, I'm on the phone. You stand there awkwardly for a minute or continue looking at the window?
I'm going to try and get someone's attention if they're...
Okay. So I'm on the phone. You just walked in. All right. Thank you so much. Cheerio. Bye-bye now. Hello. How you doing?
Good afternoon. I'm very well, thank you. Yourself?
Yes, good. How can I help?
So I was just walking past and saw Prince of Wales Street in the window. I was just wondering, is that still available?
It is, yeah. We've got the keys.
Yeah, perfect. And when is it available from? Is that a student property?
It's going to be available as from the 1st of March.
It
was previously a student property, yes. But what's your situation?
So we're not actually a group of students. We are a professional renting company. We house contractors in the marine industry. And we take on properties around Southampton and Portsmouth. And we're trying to expand our portfolio due to increased demand.
Okay.
Is this something you guys facilitate?
Potentially, yeah. I mean, we've got viewings. I'd have to speak to the landlord, but we've got viewings tomorrow, so we're happy to show you around. Did you want to maybe sit down and tell us a bit more about your situation and your company? Yeah, that's cool, man. That's smooth. I noticed what you did was you led with questions. You, as is the elephant in the room, which was you told your story, i.e. this is our situation, and you're confident, but then asked a question. So you do that, and then what? And then you go and view it?
Go and view it.
How do you stack the numbers on it? So let's say it's a 6-bed property that was previously a student house. It's in good condition, it's furnished, and now the landlord's thinking, do I want a block of students a bit confused landlord, bit tired landlord, it's on the market, it's on for $2,000, it's in Portsmouth. How are you working out whether this, what's the kind of due diligence and number crunching and formulas you're using?
First of all, they're normally student houses and they're normally never in a good condition. That's
okay, fair enough.
that's why they've not rented.
That's fair.
And since they've built all of these purpose-built student blocks, the student HMO market is dying. And they're not converting them to professionals. So our rule of thumb is, so we'll go on spare room, find out what the property, what average room rents are going for.
700.
Yeah, okay, 700. 700 times 5, 3,500.
Quick math.
We're then gonna allow £100 per person for bills.
Right.
Just as a quick rule of thumb.
Yeah.
And then what our formula is, it has to be in positive cash flow if one room is empty.
Right.
So if it's going to be what... If your profit's got to be more than £700 to £800 a month.
Makes sense. So if there's 6 bedrooms, you work on the basis that even if there's 1 bedroom empty, you're still making profit.
Yeah, or break even, worst case. But
right.
But exactly that. That if one room's empty, then you're not in the red.
How much are you making on average per rent to HMO then?
So on average, it depends on the size. We've got a 6-bed, which is making us $1,500, which is a really good deal. It was quite high startup, and we've gone for a high-end finish, and this is all on suites. And then some of the lower-end stuff is making around $800.
Okay, that's decent.
Yes.
Do you want to scale that? Is the plan to grow that big, or is the plan to do that, make a bit of money, but really grow your own portfolio on the BRRs?
It's a great question. And when you look at it on a numbers standpoint, when you think I've just done 180K in Sheffield and now refinancing and getting that back out. But if you put, if say on average each deal makes $1,000 a month and you did 18 deals for $10,000 each, you'd have some serious cash flow there. So I think in general, our plan is to build the rent to HMO until we're up to about maybe 10 and then start to get someone employed.
Yeah.
And then get them to manage it.
I was you.
Go on.
Buy as many houses as I possibly can.
Yeah.
And bigger the better.
Yeah.
Because I think that house prices are going to continue going up.
Of course.
I think that, I mean, I'm not saying I wouldn't do the rent-to-rents. I think that's great. It's bringing you in cash flow.
Exactly.
And it's fast pound. It's a trade. You need a trading business. You don't have a job. You can't just wait.
Yeah, I know.
Buying houses is slow, boring. It doesn't take much time. Unless you're doing what you do, jumping in on the tools. Yeah, but you probably shouldn't do that.
I learned last time.
It don't make sense to do that.
I learned last time that it took me away from the rent-to-rent to the other bits. And I was just...
How much could you pay someone to do that? £150 a day?
Yeah.
What's your time worth? A hell of a lot more than that. So why do it?
Yeah.
And this is my slight, going back to your initial point about don't buy houses far away. Because if you need to go, it's like, but you shouldn't go. I don't go. Mm. If I've got a hotel in the Peak District, I'm not thinking, oh, in fact, I like it being in the Peak District. You know why? Because it means that I'll never go.
Yeah.
If it was on my doorstep, I might be thinking, you know what, I'll just do it myself. But because it's far away, it forces me to systemize it so that I don't have to go. So this is nuanced.
Of course, but I think where I got burnt to start with, I was then like, shit, I need to...
No, you should never have done that deal in Sheffield.
Yeah,
I agree.
I know that now, but now I was like, right, I need to save it. I need to get it on budget. I need to...
You did well. You turned it around. Yeah. And I think as well, you got to learn from doing.
Of course.
I mean, the academy is about learning and doing at the same time. Because if it's just academic, you're not learning. You can't learn to drive by just reading a book or watching a video. You have to drive. But if you drive and go, I'm just going to just do it without an instructor, you're going to crash.
Mm.
And you're going to crash big time. You know,
it'll be expensive.
I mean, even if you're on the academy, you've got all the mentoring, you're still going to have hiccups and niggles. But you've got the support and infrastructure and learning to be able to not go bankrupt. So how did you justify the academy then? Because that's a big expense. How did you justify that decision?
I didn't think it was... Actually, to be fair, I had watched every single one of your winners on a Wednesday leading up to the point, and I walked down to the pub down the road when I was on the £2,000. I'd done the Rent to HMO and Rent to SA course, I think it was the £2,000 course, and then I wasn't going to sign up for the academy. I was just going to do that and go away and do my HMO and then keep my SAs. I mean, I was down the road having dinner and it was Chris, the guy from Portugal, with a portfolio of 20 million or something.
Chris White, very successful.
I was watching his winners on a Wednesday and you asked him, what's your biggest regret? And he goes, not joining the academy soon enough.
Yeah.
I goes, you what? He's worth 20 mil. And his regret was not joining the academy soon enough. So I walked straight down there, spoke to Chris and put it straight on the credit card there and then.
Yeah. It's interesting you say that. Because the thing is, you can, especially if you've got natural get up and go, like you, you're smart, you've got natural get up and go, you've got business acumen, you've got building experience, your dad was in the industry, you saw flipping houses. A lot of people like you, they think, oh, you know what? I'm going to just do a little bit of YouTube, or maybe go on a course or two, but I don't need the academy. I'm just going to do it on my own. And they're right. They can do it on their own. But if they were to get the network and the support and the mentoring and the guidance and the hacks, you don't know what you don't know, they'll just get there faster. So it's do you want this to take 10 years or do you want this to take 2? I think that's kind of the question, but that's interesting what you said about Chris White. And also eviction, we have to talk about that. How did that come about? People even watching this now might be like, do I recognize him? So you were on the eviction, bro.
I was indeed.
Did well as well. Smashed it.
Thank you very
much. Smashed it.
Just about did well.
Yeah, you did well. You did really good. So how did that come about? And what was your experience? And what was the learning from that?
So firstly...
And did we do you dirty on the edit or not?
Did you do me dirty on the edit?
Well, not me, but no. him.
I don't think so. I think in general, from some of the stuff that did get filmed of me doing and what got put on there, I was quite happy with it.
We got you, bro.
How did that come about? Well, firstly, I applied. I'd already messaged you, DM'd you on Insta about it, and then applied, got selected, and the rest is history.
So you spent weeks, living in my hotel.
Yeah. Good old Willingham.
Yeah. Having me kicking your ass constantly. In boardroom meetings with all the mentors around, fully immersed, quite a surreal thing. Really.
It was very intense, you know, lack of sleep the entire time, working 18 hours or so a day.
Yeah.
Like, it was very, very grueling.
What? Have you kept in touch with the other contestants?
Yeah, I have. I speak to quite a few of them.
Who have you kept in touch with the most?
Elijah?
Yeah. Was there a bit of a romance, maybe?
Strictly business, Samuel. You know yeah. me.
Okay. But you know what? Lifelong friends is a good thing.
It is, indeed.
And so following on from the eviction, I mean, when you left the process, when you were evicted out of the building, what was the key takeaway?
Key takeaway, I spoke about this when I was the guest speaker at Southampton the other week, was focus. Follow one course until successful.
Yeah.
The reason we achieved so much in 24, 48 hours is because you knew you were going home. And all you could do is make calls. So we were calling on the lease option. We made 220 calls in one day. Yeah. And then I was on the Facebook groups in the Gumtree and that sort of thing all evening, spamming out emails. So that's why we achieved so much, was just the sheer work volume.
Achieved so much though.
That like,
how much did you guys make? And bear in mind, there's only, I can't remember how many there was on the challenge.
51K in deals.
51 grand with how many people?
Between three people.
So three people made 51 grand. You,
me, Bex and Natalie.
Right. And that's literally finding deals from scratch, finding investors and using your network and stuff, fine. And selling these deals. That's an absurd amount of money to make.
It is. It's
an absurd amount of money to make. Then the lease option challenge, giving like 2 days to go and secure a lease option, which you did. Then, refurbishing a room. You put a whole bathroom suite. In a room and renovate the whole room, furnished it in like 3 days.
Yeah.
What it shows me, Elon Musk says, if you give yourself 6 months to tidy your bedroom, it will take 6 months. And I think the same way, if you give yourself 40 years to retire, yeah, it will take 40 years. But if you say, no, I'm not having that. I will retire in 3 years. I'm going to become financially free in 12 months. You can achieve a lot in a short, and I think you've proved that.
Half of business is just doing it faster than anyone else can.
People might watch things like the eviction or the challenges or the financial, or even Winners on a Wednesday and think, sounds too good to be true. I must be actors. You're about as raw as they come.
Like, that's why I'd watched every single Winners on a Wednesday before signing up. And I was still skeptical because, yeah, you think they're actors. You think it's all too good to be true and that sort of thing. So, yeah.
It's surreal. It's the reality. And of course there's hardships. And you have experienced that in Sheffield.
For sure, 100%.
With a joint venture partner, it didn't work out and you deal with it.
Exactly. But everything in life is your own fault. You know, it was my own fault for accepting that deal. It was my own fault for being a bit too hands-off when I probably could have prevented it going wrong.
Yeah,
earlier,
true.
If I was more present, if I wasn't off enjoying myself and just thinking that my money was going to be hands-off, I should have been more locked in and more focused on project management or checking in.
I think there's a lot of lazy property entrepreneurs and investors that try and take shortcuts and think, oh, you know what? I'm just going to pay someone to do it all for me. Mm. Pay a deal sourcer to find me a rent to rent. That's the biggest one I see where people just go, I'll give you $3,000, find me a rent to rent, and then I'm just going to make $1,000 a month passive. It's a business. It's like saying, I'm just going to pay someone to start a business for me and run a successful business. That's not the real world.
No.
And when you're lazy and when you cut corners and when you're uneducated and when you just abrogate all responsibility, you're going to end up in a mess.
Exactly. And so I learned from that mistake, which is why I manage everything now myself completely and why I'm full-time in this business.
But also, when you do pass management responsibility over to somebody else, it's about making sure that that's the right person, they're well-equipped. You give them KPIs, you keep an eye on them. It's not to say you have to do everything yourself, but it's to say you can't just remove responsibility from yourself altogether and just go, oh, do it for me. It's lazy. It doesn't work.
For sure. And then you lose all the profit as well.
Yeah, of course.
If you're going to pay someone else.
What's this property you got in Wales?
So we bought a pub at post auction.
Mm.
We paid £80,000 for it. So again, buying somewhere cheap for cash because I didn't realise I could use bridging finance local to me. So we took out pre-planned advice from multiple sources. We're all told that it should pass, that we want to convert it into 4 apartments. And after about 6 months in a kind of pre-app with the council, they are not budging on minimum parking standards for HMOs or for flats. So they want 1.5 to 2 spaces per apartment. and the pub has no parking at all. So they won't budge on that, even though it's been closed for about 2 years. So I've decided enough is enough. We've put it back into auction and we had an offer last week of 84K.
Fair enough, mate.
So it's going to be about a 5K loss for the plan and that sort of thing.
I don't blame you. But it's not worth the headache.
I can get my... So I was 50-50 on that with Jacques. We both put in 40K. He raised the money for that. I used my own money for that, sold shares. And I'll get me 40 grand back. And then that will probably just pump that into 5 or 6 rent-to-rents.
You know what? It would have been nice if it worked, but that happens to the best of us.
Exactly.
And whenever you do a deal, you need to look at the best case and the worst case. The worst case is you don't get planning. It's a nightmare. You have it for 6 months. It's a waste of time. You end up sticking it back in an auction and selling it and lose 5 grand.
Exactly.
Take it on the chin.
Exactly. Move on. It's the lesson I've learned. Right. Most importantly, is not to try. So whilst I'm just getting started realistically in these developments, everyone thinks you want to do these massive developments, you want to do this, but they will take loads of time. I could have been in and out of a HMO 6-bed permitted development conversion to me in 6 months.
Yeah.
And what it's taught me then is to do the slower stuff or to do the faster stuff, which you haven't got outside factors like the council and planning that you can't control. If you're just going to use permitted development or small or sui gen, which you can already be working on whilst the HMO is going, rather than having to wait months for planning. So it's every day's a school day. It's
especially
a 5 grand lesson, and I've learned a lot from it.
Especially, that's the thing though, like that's a 5 grand lesson. That could have been a 25 grand lesson.
Oh, for sure. It could have been a 250 grand lesson.
Well, maybe. But sometimes as well, the lesson for me is you did the right thing in drawing a line under the sand. Sometimes you have to know when to move on because you can't flog a dead horse.
No.
You can't become emotionally attached to a deal. When emotions are high, intelligence is low. Drawing a line. You also can't expect to get planning. Just because there's got, it might have lapsed planning. You might think it will get planning. The council might even have, you could have done a pre-app previous to buying it and the pre-app could have come back all thumbs good.
Mm.
But until you've actually got planning.
Exactly. You've just got a derelict pub.
Yeah. No, you and they're stupid though, aren't they?
Yeah.
Why would they just want a derelict pub and not give you planning for anything? And they don't help you. They don't go, we're not going to give you planning for 4 flats, but what we will give you is planning for 2 semis.
Exactly.
They won't do that. They'll just go, no, because there's like a bargain. And you're just left, okay, well, they're not helpful.
It's just computer says no. This is
Labour Party is saying they're going to reform the planning system. I haven't seen nothing yet.
No.
Let's see.
We will see.
We will see. So what are you excited about most in the future?
Currently right now is the HMO developments that are going to be...
That sounds good.
That I'm going to be undertaking.
And you know you're sugar when it comes to HMOs now, bro.
Yeah, exactly.
How's the training been? What's the academy been like? Did it meet your expectations?
It did in general, yes. I'd already had quite a big background in the trade already, so I was already very clued up on refurb costs and this sort of stuff and systems. But one thing is like commercial valuations, had no idea about them. Didn't know about refinancing as stuff. The contracts and the legal packs and that sort of thing that you guys, not legal packs, the contracts you guys provide and the support and the mentorship was exactly one of the reasons I joined the academy, because I already had the refurb experience. I already knew what I was doing and such like that. But when you're going to start investing your own money, it's a bit scary.
Yeah.
And I didn't want to run it past everything past my dad, because my dad's old and doesn't want to do property anymore. He thinks I'm wasting my time. So I needed some sort of mentorship, some sort of guide that wasn't in my family.
Yeah.
So that's one of the reasons I joined, and that's been exactly what I got.
And also as well with like commercial valuations and stuff, you don't know what you don't know.
Exactly.
You could be doing a building and it's like, actually, if I got a commercial valuation and did this as a sui gen, it's going to be, I could make an extra 100 grand.
Exactly. And that's exactly what I am going to do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, mate, it's been really good working with you. Great having you on the eviction.
Thank you very much.
Appreciate you keeping it real as always, working hard as always. And I wish you nothing but continued success.
Thank you very much, Samuel.
Thank you, brother.